Like Chris said, Matthew and John, they kind of tell a story. Sometimes you tell a story, you leave out some details, and it's not a big deal. It's not like the thing in John isn't false or isn't true. It's just John, for some reason, left out a really, really crazy part of the story, and Matthew happened to pick it up on. He's like, "Dude, we can't miss this. I don't know what John's thinking, but I'm writing this down." And so he writes down this part of the story that maybe you've heard before. It's the part where Peter walks on the water, and he sinks. You guys heard that before? Now, even if you haven't been to church either ever or for a very long time, maybe the story sounds somewhat familiar, and we're going to talk about a miracle today. Last week, we talked about a miracle too. Ryan talked about the fact that Jesus had about 15,000 to 20,000 people in front of him, and he's got five crackers, and he's got two fish, and he just starts unleashing sushi to just everyone that's there, and they get stuffed to the brim. And it was this miracle that's just, it's awesome. That's a cool story. And if you were like Ryan, who shared last week, he's like, "Man, I began doubting a lot of these stories in my life. I was a skeptic." And so I hear a miracle, I hear a story like that, and I immediately go, "Yeah, right. Okay, church people, come on. That's just a story that is supposed to inspire you. That's a cool little story meant to give you a little motivation." And the only problem is the 15,000 people who were there that day said it happened. And there's been nothing that said it didn't. And so now all of a sudden, he's like, Ryan was like, "I was a skeptic, but then I noticed that this was a factual, this was a real event. What do I do with that information?" And I bring a little bit of a different perspective to this stage. I didn't necessarily grow up a skeptic by any means. I was a pastor's kid. My dad's a pastor in Scottsdale. And so I grew up hearing these sorts of miracles, these Bible stories, these fairy tales or whatever. And I just believed it. Like, yeah, well, that's probably true. Because my dad believed it, or my family believed it, or that's what I've always known. And so I remember when I was in high school, I actually reached a point where I was like, wait a second, I've got to figure out if that is what I think. If this is true. I wasn't like a skeptic, I just guess I was gullible. I was like, "Oh yeah, no, that happened. I'm pretty sure." And so it's interesting. We've got a miracle last weekend, we've got a miracle this weekend that we're gonna talk about that aren't just cool stories, they're real, authentic, factual events that did happen, and we can't ignore it. We've got information that is in front of us in this book that, if this is true, if that actually happened, man, what does that even mean? What does that even mean for us today? And that's what I want us to get to at the end of this time, whatever it is, maybe in a half an hour from now, before we walk out that door, there is something that we just read or we just heard or we just experienced that we've got to come to terms with. And it hopefully should change us and maybe rock us inside. And Chris read the text on up here on stage, and I love it so much that I was studying it, and I was trying to really put myself in that boat. What was that like? What would that have been like? Because we read a story, and it's like, yeah, these guys are in a storm, and it's crazy, and they're going to die, and then Jesus shows up, and they're fine. And then we just kind of move on to the rest of John 6. Whoa, hold on. You guys know, when you've seen a movie, you've seen it in surround sound, you've been in that, and the story makes it kind of, the movie makes that scene come alive, and you actually feel like you're there, and it changes things. And so it's like, man, these are the types of stories we've got to figure out a way to put ourselves in that boat. And so, it said that it was evening. Let's turn the lights down a little bit. It said it was evening, all right? It said it was a little bit chilly. Maybe there was like a cold, crisp breeze coming off of the ocean, the sea. And so I turned the air down just a little bit. I don't know if you noticed that when you walked in here. I kind of cranked the air down a little bit. And there was a storm, so it was raining. And so I'm going to go turn on that fire alarm and make this. No, I'm just kidding. So there actually is a storm coming this way, which is very ironic. But I want us to just imagine this scene right now, pretend you are one of these disciples. You're in that boat. Scratch that. Rewind just a little bit. Pretend you're walking to the boat. Jesus said, hey, I'm going to meet you on the other side. I've got to deal with these people. There's about 20,000 people here. I'm going to take care of it. You guys go on ahead. I'll meet you there. I'll like fly or something. I'll figure it out. And so they start walking towards the boat. And I imagine they're just probably exhausted, absolutely just drained. Feeding 20,000 people is probably pretty tiring, I would imagine, because Jesus just didn't make it rain. He actually said, hey, disciples, I'm gonna need you to do this. And so they take all of the food and they just start distributing it to all the people. And then when that's done, Jesus is like, hey, we've got to pick up these leftovers. Here's a couple doggy bags. We're going to want that sushi later. I'm telling you, it's going to be good. It's going to stay a while. I'll take care of it. And so they get all of these 12 huge baskets and they're picking up all the leftovers that day. And they're wiped, dude. And so they're walking to this boat, probably thinking, oh, man, 5 mile boat ride up ahead. I'm going to find that corner seat, the window seat, get that neck pillow. I'm just going to take a nap. I'm going to just get knocked out, man. This is going to be a nice just cruise, get me refreshed, recharged for the next day. And then all of a sudden, there's a disciple that sees something they don't see, and they go, hey, guys, I don't think that's going to happen. And it's a sight that no sailor ever wants to see up ahead. A flash way off in the distance kind of comes from this dark gray, almost black cloud. And you could just hear a pin drop because they realize a storm's coming. Okay, everyone in the boat, let's go. Come on, we don't got much time. Peter, get the bread, get all the bread. Mark, where you at? Mark, get the fish, put all that in the back of the boat. You guys remember your positions? Dear goodness, okay, it is coming down hard. Someone who's got the oars, you got the oars, okay. You guys, you make sure the sail is good, you make sure that's good. We've got to go here, all right? We've got a record time to beat. And so, I mean, they were planning on the scenic drive, you know, they were kind of just kicking back and relaxed, but all of a sudden now, they've got a storm to beat. And so they've got like that perfect sync going. You know what I mean? They've got like the down, up, dig, twist, down, up, dig, twist. Like they're grooving, man. They're grooving. Down, up, dig, twist, down, snap. Philip's oar just broke. Crap. Oh, what do we do? I don't know. And then all of a sudden the sync kind of gets disruptive. And then, oh dear, okay, it's coming down even harder. It's coming down even harder. And dude, they just were rowing for probably almost at least 4 hours at this point. And so it's like jello arms. It's like just, they can't do it anymore. No one is rowing in the same pace. No one is doing the same thing that they just were. And if it couldn't get any worse, here comes one of those black, enormous cumulonimbus clouds just kind of rolling off right from the mountainside, like an Arizona haboob, just kind of come. I hate that word. And it's just kind of coming. It's coming right toward him, like, oh, and the land is out of sight. Jesus, nowhere to be found. Where did Jesus go? We kind of need him at this point. And it's not just wind. It is like rain, not coming down, coming sideways, like paintballs, just hitting them all in the face. And all of a sudden, Philip just goes, ah! Here comes a wave. Philip's having a bad day. Here comes this tidal wave. Just boosh, hits Philip. It just drills him, okay? So we got a problem on our hands. The boat is completely, and I'm talking completely out of control. There's absolutely no way we can control this boat. It's halfway full of water at this point, and the thought of that is in everyone's mind is, I might die tonight. I might die tonight. And then all of a sudden, what is that? Oh, dude, that is a ghost. That is a ghost. That is a ghost, people. We got a ghost. And all of a sudden, they see this something that's on the water. It's walking on the water. It's walking on the water. And then you hear this incredibly deep, manly, like Morgan Freeman voice, just, "Don't be afraid, it's me." And it's just like surround sound coming through the clouds, coming through the thunder. And Peter recognizes the voice. He goes, "Wait, no. That's Jesus. Guys, that's Jesus. Jesus, hey, is that you? Okay. If that's you, tell me to do something crazy. Tell me to do something stupid. Tell me to do something impossible. If that's you, I will walk on this water right now. Get over here." Woo! And he jumps out. He lands. He starts like tiptoeing on the water. And he's like freaking out. Like, this is insane. This is crazy. And he just looks over at Jesus. And Jesus is like surfing. "Hey, Pete, what up? Watch this, man." And so Peter's like, okay, Jesus. And he starts surfing a wave. Peter starts surfing a wave. And he realizes, I am surfing a wave without a board. Without a board. And he looks around. And he realizes that wave is really big. That rain is scary. And fear begins to paralyze him. And he starts to sink. He starts to sink into the water. It's above his knees at this point. It's going up past his waist, up to his chest, and it's up at his chin. He's got 3 more seconds of air, and he finally just, "Jesus, come going down." And he goes down under the water. And then, boom, Jesus' hand rips through the water, grabs Peter's robe, and rips him out. And Jesus says, in firmness and love, "Why did you doubt?" And Peter was speechless. Which is fine, because there's no time for a conversation, because there's another wave coming for them, and Jesus sees it, and he's like, "All right, let's go, Pete." He puts him over his shoulder. The boat's only about 50 feet away, and he sees one last wave to ride, and Jesus, with Peter on his shoulder, is surfing towards the boat. He puts one arm onto the boat, chucks Peter over the edge, and the moment he got in, immediately, the storm stopped. Not a new drop of rain fell. Not a piece of fabric on that sail moved an inch. The water was like a plane of glass. And the only sound that you could hear was the panicked, heavy breathing of those disciples. And it was dead silent. And who broke the silence but Peter? In a trembling voice, he says, "Truly, that's the Son of God. That's the Son of God." And the text says they started worshiping Jesus in that boat right then and there. And in John, it says right after that, they like all of a sudden were at land. Like they just teleported right at land. They were in the middle, 3 miles into the lake, and all of a sudden Jesus goes, "All right, let's go. We got some work to do." Man, what a scene. What a story. Because backtrack, the last 24 hours that these disciples just went through is insane. How many highs and how many lows did they just have? They saw a hopeless situation of 20,000 people that were starving, and Jesus goes, "Yeah, watch this." They thought they were going to die, and all of a sudden Jesus comes surfing on the wave, picks Peter out of the water, says, "Hey, what's up?" Zoom. And now they got to walk off this boat and get back on to work. And if this is true, if that happened, it's not a fairy tale, it's not some scene from The Matrix, it's nothing, it actually happened. What do we do with that information? And there's something about this story that we don't know. Unless you're some professor at Yale with a degree in like a master's of Hebrew literature and mythology, and you just don't know this part I'm about to tell you off the top of your head. Because in the Hebrew culture, they had myths. And the water, one of the myths, the water was a symbol of evil, of chaos, of disorder, of just spiritual darkness. So this lake that they were on, when they saw this storm coming, they didn't just see this as a physical problem. They saw it as a representation and a symbol of a big spiritual problem. They saw that as evil coming their way. And so water symbolized evil and chaos. And so for Jesus to literally walk all over spiritual darkness and chaos and wickedness wasn't just some impressive trick. It was a statement that he was trying to make to them. You think this wave scares me? I decided how high it should go. That hurricane wind, what is this, like 75 miles an hour? Dude, I got more power, more wind in here than that hurricane does. Dude, that lightning bolt, I just told it where to go. He's like, I'm not walking around like I own the place. I'm walking around like I made the place. And that scene, that storm was a spiritual game changer for these guys. Because what does the text say? It says when that happened, then they're like, that's the Son of God. Okay, he's not just some rabbi, he's not some miracle worker. That is the Son of God. And it was this climactic moment of their spiritual lives when they had a storm in front of them. They were faced with this reality of who Jesus was. And that's so true of us too. Storms can make us come to that reality. It can be a make it or break it for our faith. And it could be a game changer. And it's something I want us to talk about today. We're gonna do something different, and there's not a lot of us, so this actually should work pretty well. We're gonna have three questions on the screen that have something to do with this story that we just read or we just heard. And so these questions are meant for you guys to have somewhat of a dialogue and a conversation with, maybe just with like a couple groups around you guys. And then at the end, we're going to come back up. We're going to finish the story and what this actually means for our life. Okay? So there's going to be three questions on the screen. We'll give you guys a couple minutes. Let's just talk about this. What is going on in our hearts and our minds right now because of this story? All right. Go. Do it.
needed. Check, check, check. Hello?
So, I just be curious if you guys, this is always the awkward part. Hey, now, on the spot. I would be curious just to see if you guys are willing to share any one of those questions that you felt like maybe resonated and summarized the whole group, or if you're willing to just be huge transparent from us all about any of those questions regarding the story with the MMU unit. Is there anyone? No? Okay. Yeah, sometimes it's in
their grandparents.
Did you guys at least talk about it with your guys' groups? Okay.
Sweet.
That's great. It's
good.
So, no one wants to share? No? Okay.
That's fine.
As long as you guys. I'm
thinking about
you guys talked about it. Yeah. I've got my man Jesse here, and he's going to actually land the plane. He's gonna come here, up here, and kind of talk about why didn't we just talk about that? What about that story? What about what we just read, we just thought about, what's going on in here? So what? Really? You know, that's the kind of how we like to make sure we walk out that door. So what? Okay. What's the big deal? And so Jesse's going to talk a little bit about some personal stuff, about what this means to him personally, and then also just kind of just encourage you guys and challenge you guys with that, all right? So, here's the deal on here for Jesse.
Sweet. So, if this story was real, I'm a skeptic. I was a skeptic. I was an atheist for 19 years. If this story actually happened, which I truly believe it did, what does it mean for us? If 2,000 plus years ago, a dude named Peter walked on water, what does it mean for us? I mean, honestly, what does it mean? For me, I noticed three themes, I guess you'd say, in this situation that can directly apply to my life personally and your lives as well. The first being the courageous act of Peter when he asked Jesus, like, first reaction, you're Jesus, I'm Peter, I'm dependent on you. Call me out on the water. Get me out of my boat. We honestly need to have that courageousness. I mean, plain and simple. I mean, my moment was kind of messy. It sounds weird, but I was in the shower. And water, that's a reoccurring theme. That's weird. And I asked, God, what do I have to do to get rid of this pain, man? I wasn't even believing it. I don't even know if you're real, God. But what do I have to do? And he said, believe. The reason I wasn't a Christian for 19 years, I mean, I grew up in a Christian home. I had every reason to be one. But the reason I wasn't is because, honestly, life was going good. So I thought. And then I realized I was masking it with lust, partying, drinking, a lot of other activities. And I was masking my pain. I was masking the true Jesse. And the cool thing, my favorite part about this story is that Peter didn't come to Jesus with this like crazy long checklist. He said, man, I did this for you. 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 I sure didn't. I believed for like a minute, literally. Time it out, like 60 seconds. And he still loved me. He still cared for me. That brings us to the second situation that's honestly hard for me to talk about. Peter caved. I cave a lot. And it sounds like really familiar, for me at least. I mean, you guys are in high school. Life gets hard. You guys have a lot of storms. I don't have to tell you that. But understand something here. Peter was Jesus' rock. Some even say Peter's best friend. And he still caved. If Peter's best friend can cave, I'm pretty sure we're okay to cave too. And you're honestly, you're probably wondering, how the heck, if this is Jesus' best friend, how can you cave, dude? How could you doubt Jesus? He's your best friend. He literally just fed 20,000 people with a kid's Lunchable. How is that even possible? I was reading this about, I took a nap, and I wasn't planning on taking the nap, but I woke up at like 2 a.m., and I read this story, and everything just clicked for me. God was talking to me in that moment at 2 a.m. in the morning as I'm writing my sermon notes. He says, dude, it's okay if you mess up, because I'm there to save you. It blows my mind how much grace he has for us. So, let's be honest. Every one of us, we cave as we feel pressure, and we go to our addictions. I wish I didn't, but I do. I mean, I'll be transparent. I'm good with that. And it's honestly a normal thing. Like, a spiritual journey isn't going to be butterflies and rainbows, let's be honest. I wish it was. I wish my addictions went away and my life got easy. My depression would just be vanished. But it didn't. It was still there. There's a song by 10th Avenue North that I was listening to as I was writing these notes. And the lyrics are, even in our shame, grace makes a way through. Be our obsession, our constellation. You are the light in and out of every season. I'm going to reread that. Even in our shame, even when I mess up, even when I don't know, just I don't trust you. Your love makes a way through. Grace makes a way through. Be our obsession. Be our light. Be the one we count on. You are the light in and out of every season. That is crazy. So, the last one is, Peter cried out. This one hits home for me. You guys heard, I in the shower, that sounds weird, but I cried out. I had nothing left. Physically, mentally, emotionally, I had nothing left. This was it for me. I'm going to start out with a quote, if you can throw that up there. It's by Timothy Keller, and it says, you don't really know Jesus is all you need until Jesus is all you have. Whew. Gosh, I can't believe how true that is. I mean, Peter understood it really fast when he screamed, Lord, save me. I understood it. I wish it was a little bit faster, but it wasn't. When I came home, or called my dad, actually, at 2 a.m. in the morning and said, hey, Dad, I got my first MIC, 19. I'm going to come home, and my sister picks me up with her best friend driving, because I don't know what she would have done if she was driving. But she was screaming at me the entire way home, like, this is what was going to happen to you if you kept on doing the path I did in high school, man. And then I open the door. My dad's up. He's to the left of me. Then my mom's bawling her eyes out because she thought her son was perfect, a little angel that never did anything wrong. But I wasn't. I sat down on the couch, and my sister sat next to me. Her best friend sat next to me, who is now one of my best friends. My dad's right here. My mom's over here. This is hard for me to say, but I confessed everything. I said, man, I'm not perfect. I sin daily. I'm addicted to drinking. I'm addicted to lust. I'm addicted to blank, blank, blank. You fill in the blanks. I'm probably addicted to everything. And my dad looks at me. My mom's crying still. My sister's crying because she didn't know. And my dad looks at me and he says, it's okay, son. You're home now. Waterfalls just came out of my eyes. It's a lot like what God thinks of us. We can run away all we want. We can say, I don't need you, God. You do. But when we come home and we walk through that door and we look at God and we say, man, I messed up. I did this. I don't know. And he says, it's okay. You're home now. So whatever your storm may look like, could look a lot different than mine. In Peter's case, it was literal. Is your first response, Peter's courage? And if you cave, will you cry out? We must understand something here. It's kind of black and white. If you call on Jesus, he'll help you. It may not be the way you want it to look like. It wasn't for me. I didn't plan this. I honestly wasn't planning to be on this stage about a year ago. I just needed help. I'm going to call the band up as I close out with a song. But just to quote another one by Timothy Keller, because that dude's a genius, that's helped me out a lot in life. It says, Jesus' miracles are not just a challenge for our mind, but a promise to our hearts. God's faithfulness will never fail you, no matter how hard the situation is. Let's pray. God, man, you know my heart. You know who I've been and who I am becoming. I wish that I understood your love. I mean, I understood your grace while I was in high school, because I grew up around you. You were everywhere. But honestly, I didn't. And I pray that these kids get that. My heart goes out to them, because I know how hard it is to be in high school and just be dependent on ourselves and not dependent on you. God, you're our Alpha and the Omega. I love you. Amen.